Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have, within you, the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So, stay with us and together, we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, what do we mean by God? Part 2. Before we explore this topic, I'd like to say a few words about Alice Bailey. Alice Bailey is the founder of the Lucis Trust, and Lucis Trust sponsors this show. Alice Bailey wrote 24 books of esoteric philosophy, and those 24 books are the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this show. The following thought is also from the works of Alice Bailey. Divinity must be lived, expressed, and manifested to be understood. God must be loved, known and revealed within the human heart and brain, in order to be intellectually grasped. Last time, we discussed the ongoing argument between the extremes of atheism and fundamentalism, and you said that atheism is an expression of a transitional state. Could you say more about that?
Yes, that's an idea that a number of religious thinkers and writers have proposed, and it was sort of something that I'd kind of dreamed up on my own. So I felt that maybe that was correct, that it's a view of people in a society where the person who might claim atheism no longer really feels he can go along with or accept the views of religion and of God of that particular society. In a way, it's a kind of a rejection of a particular culture's view of God. And as we talked last time, there are many different cultural interpretations or perspectives or understandings of God. No one culture has the definitive answer, I don't think. And a lot of our understanding about divinity has to do with cultural traditions and practices. Religion, in many respects, is a human creation. But what we're trying to do in these programs is to talk in a more culture-free way about the nature of God. For example, we talked last week about the fact that we tend to speak of God as a person, as we refer to him as he, and that infers that we're dealing with a kind of a personality, a tremendous personality, but a personality nonetheless. This may be one of the objections of the atheists.
Yes, I think that's just a point of view, that if it's this God is so personalized that it becomes it's reduced to human stature, that is someone that you can talk to and just pray to and who will answer your questions about your everyday life, then I think that's maybe a little very limited view of God, and it's a kind of view that tends to distort God rather than reveal it.
And degrade?
Degrade God, yes.
I once heard a minister on television refer to God as mother, lover, father, friend. Ew. That does not define how I understand God, but that was enough for that minister. But it's interesting what Karen Armstrong says. She's a very respected religious scholar, British. She wrote a book called The History of God, which traces the development of three great monotheistic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Those are the three major monotheistic religious traditions. And she said that they have all three imbued us with an understanding of God that is very personal. But she pointed out that this was probably right for the times in which those religions were really gaining followers, because that coincides with the growth of human rights, individual rights, humanistic values. And so I suppose the defining of God as of personal, having personal interest in the individual, naturally coincides with the recognition that every individual is a precious and divine being with rights just for having shown up.
Yes, it's a, well, men have turned around the saying that we're made in the image of God,
mm-hmm.
and we've turned that around and now say God is made in our image.
Yeah, exactly.
And so our image is this physical person who...
Father, mother, lover,
father,
friend.
Father, mother, lover, friend. And so this is, must be what God is. We make God into the same image when we should be looking at it from the other perspective, from made in the image of God, to try to stretch our minds in a way, what is the image of God? What does God really look like? And what is God really like?
Well, one of the... outcomes of this belief in a personal God is that many people have concluded that Buddhism, which does not accept propose a concept of a personal God, must therefore be atheistic. And I've heard people claim that Buddhism isn't really a religion, it's more of a philosophy, because it doesn't have a personal God at the center. And yet, this is a very interesting question that both Houston Smith, the religious scholar, and Alice Bailey have debated and said is incorrect. Alice Bailey put it very well. She said that Buddhism doesn't recognize God as an entity, as an individual, or as a personality. But she said that doesn't mean that Buddhism is atheist. She said they believe in reincarnation, the return of the inner essence, and by implication they believe in a higher law. She said both schools of thought, both the Western or monotheistic concept of God and the Buddhist Eastern concept, are right and in no way contradict each other. She said in their synthesis and blending, the truth as it really is can begin dimly to appear. And people who have asked for the paper from the recent series of programs we did on qualities of God will find this discussion by Alice Bailey in the paper they requested.
The Psychology of God.
Psychology of God, yes. Mm-hmm. The six or seven part series we recently did. She said there is a God transcendent who, having pervaded the universe with a fragment of myself, said, I remain, and there's a God immanent whose life dwells within every form in all kingdoms of nature. And there's likewise in every human being a transcendent soul, which when the life cycle on earth has come and gone and the period of manifestation is over, the death of the body, becomes again the unmanifest, formless being, but nevertheless can say still, I remain. So she said, we speak of God as a person, we speak of his will, his nature, and his form, but at the same time, behind the formed world is the formless one, that which is not an individual, who is free of all the limitations of individual existence. And so she concluded, therefore, the Buddhist is right when he emphasizes the non-individualized nature of deity and refuses to personalize deity.
Right, and we have this same pattern within ourselves. I mean, human beings are made, as we said before, made in the image of God, but that image includes the pattern like the human soul and the human incarnated soul. There is a physical manifestation and there is a non-physical manifestation to every human being. And it's trying to we can understand God by understanding ourselves and how we are made. And we are made in the same pattern that God is made in. And I don't know if that's you follow that, but that's the way I understand it. And that's the way it's outlined in the Bailey books. That, and we get this, as she says, when a person dies, he's no longer in that manifested state. He leaves that physical body and returns to the unmanifested state, in returns to the soul, is reabsorbed back into the soul consciousness.
And yet can say, I remain.
And he remains.
Well, if we can grasp the continuity of that life after the death of the body, then surely we can stretch our imaginations to imagine that God dwells both in the world, God immanent, and is utterly transcendent of and apart from and beyond the formed world. She, Alice Bailey, said the Eastern understanding of the Buddha views life as beyond and free from the form world. That's the concept of God transcendent that the Eastern religions have given us. And the Christian teaching of Christ dwelling in the world and the Christ principle dwelling in every human heart gives us the concept of God immanent, that God dwells within us and within all forms. And she said in the synthesis of Eastern and Western teachings and the merging of these two great schools of thought, something of the superlative whole can be sensed, sensed merely, not known.
Mm.
I think that's so encouraging to think that both schools of thought are viewing the one, as the Hindus would refer to him, the one without a second. But from different perspectives, it doesn't make one right and the other wrong, and it doesn't mean you have to pick sides. Really, all those views and still more are needed if we are ever to expand our understanding.
Yes, and this is really what religion perhaps should be doing today, is to combining these two schools of thought, the Eastern and the Western traditions, and transcending both of them. In other words, bringing them both together and finding that middle ground between the two of them, so that they're not in competition, but they're actually just two aspects of one great whole.
I think one of the problems or challenges of the doctrine of God immanent is to find a way to formulate a concept of God without degrading him or it, without demeaning it. In other words, how can God be present in the manifested world without being modified by it? And when we start referring to God as father, mother, lover, friend, I think we are degrading the whole nature of the one. But it's the best that that mind can do. Defining God by negatives may help. In other words, stripping away all the human attributes that we tend to want to give such a being might be a way to start. Every concept that's grasped by the mind becomes an obstacle in the quest of those who search, one great seeker said. Every concept that can be grasped by the mind sooner or later becomes an obstacle. So we have to be prepared to give up every notion every step of the way.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight, our topic for today, What Do We Mean by God? Part 2. We have a special offer from Lucis Publishing Company, and that's the Alice Bailey book, Ponder on This. Ponder on This is a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey, including a chapter on the nature of God. One of the earliest Alice Bailey books that I read was Ponder on This, and I liked it that I started off like that, because It's an abridgment of all the different topics that Alice Bailey explores in a much deeper fashion in her larger books. However, the advantage of reading this particular book is it helps you to go through the different topics in a meaningful way. I mean, you get the essence of what each book is about. And then it helps you as far as establishing an order of priority as to how to go about approaching the 24 books. So if you'd like to take advantage of this offer, the special offer comes in the form of free shipping and handling. It's available for $19, and what you'll need to do is send a check or a money order, $19, to Lucis Publishing, Lucis is L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And just write a little note that you heard about the offer on the show Inner Sight. Once again, check or money order, $19 for the Alice Bailey book, Ponder on This. Send it to Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. We appreciate your donations. They are tax deductible, and it certainly is evidence of your support. And those donations, both large and small, is what enables us to continue doing these shows for you. So if you'd like to donate to help us out with our radio shows, send your donations to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And if you'd like to call us for any reason whatsoever, you can do so on our toll-free number, which is 1-866-695-8247. That's 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it is 1-866-NY. Lucis, think of 1-866 New York Lucis. All of our Inner Sight programs can be heard on our website at www.lucistrust.org. On the homepage, you'll find a link to today's program, which will be available for hearing in a day or two. Last week's program is already available, and many of our past programs can also be heard. Once again, it's www.lucistrust.org. The theme of each week's program is posted in advance on our website, so this way you can see in advance what next Sunday's program will be. And I'd like to go back to the opening thought taken from the context of one of Alice Bailey's books, once again, divinity must be lived, expressed, and manifested. To be understood, God must be loved, known, and revealed within the human heart and brain in order to be intellectually grasped. I mean, this does give me a lot of pause for thought, and I've really considered this thought a lot. But what does it mean? How does that happen, that God must be loved, known, and revealed within the human heart and brain? How does that happen that he is revealed? Or here we go with the giving him the definition of a he, but for lack of a better word at the
problem.
Moment. But how does that happen that God is revealed within the human heart and brain?
Especially since we just concluded before the break by saying that every concept grasped by the mind becomes an obstacle in the quest of those who search. I suppose it's revealed, the realization of divinity must be revealed by the mind and brain, but only after they have transcended themselves and allowed the intuition to grasp the nature of reality on a level higher than the mind can reach. And this is an area where science and spirituality may have some different perspectives. But the mind can carry us only so far. Then the intuition is needed, pure reason, the plane of Buddhi, as the ageless wisdom calls it. But in time, and in order to make those recognitions really part of one's own material, one's own understanding, they have to be grasped by the mind, knowing that in doing so, they are probably stepped down and materialized in a way that they lose some of their true beauty that they retain on their own level. But how else are we to be able to communicate and to manifest what we understand if our minds can't grasp it. Yet at the same time, we're told that reality transcends whatever the mind can conceive. I wonder if all of this discussion is part of the reason why Jews refuse to name God. His name is never spelled out or pronounced, and Muslims refuse to permit images of his likeness. I think there might be the realization that God cannot be grasped in his entirety, in his essence, by the rational mind. And language is what the rational mind uses for defining concepts formed by the five senses. And yet God can't be reached by the five senses. He exists beyond them. Sometimes I think it makes more sense to simply hum or chant a particular tone like Om. And I'm not just joking, because that produces a similarity of vibration. I wonder if that's why music is such an essential feature of many religious traditions.
Well, sure. I mean, music penetrates more deeply, I think, very deeply to a lot of people. It resonates deep within the soul, and because it is dealing with vibrations.
If you listen to Bach, no words are needed.
Right. I mean, it's something that's hard to explain, but it penetrates much more deeply than just the words on a page, for example, or even a picture. So I think some people are more subjected to music than others.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking while you were speaking that the way, and it's in the opening thought there, to divinity must be lived, expressed, and manifest to be understood, and God must be loved. That's the way we learn to understand what God is by expressing those qualities that are already in us, the qualities that we inherit from God. And the way that we understand God is starting with the God immanent, the God within, and because that's where these qualities lie, and that's where they should be expressed first. And by learning to love, we understand how God, the love of God.
Mm-hmm.
And by learning we make all kinds of mistakes, and we love emotionally, but that's a start. But it has to be carried on beyond that, to understand God as an inclusive God, the inclusive love, the unconditional love of God. That requires us to reach a little further beyond, and that's where the mind comes in, not to analyze that, but just to express love in a more inclusive way. That's how we learn to understand what God is, by learning to express those qualities of God.
And yes, I agree with every bit of that, but I'm also wondering, some great thinker, I do not know who, said we wait for God to descend from on high. In other words, sort of like the fire brigade to come and bail us out, rather than developing a sense of him in our own consciousness. Maybe that is what you're speaking of. We wait for him to come to us, rather than we making the journey to him. And as you say, it starts with love. I know I refer to this parable a lot, but I really love it a lot. The parable of the prodigal son. For me, it's one of those truths that I'll probably spend the rest of my life trying to understand, because I think it's so rich a teaching. The prodigal son who left the father's home and went off and led the dissolute life of the senses and of pleasure and of wastefulness and debauchery until he sobered up and had enough. And he said, I will arise and go to my father. And when he did, when he returned home, the father rushed out to meet him, which I think is the parable of what God waits for from us. As we approach him, divinity approaches us. not as one being rushing out to another, but like approaches like attracts like. Synchronicity works in a mysterious way. So probably all of this fits with what you've been saying. If we want to know God, we should start by being more like we think his qualities are.
Well, it comes down to invocation and evocation. that we have the great invocation, which Sarah sounds at the end of the program. It's an invocation for light and love and the will to good to flow into the world. And it is said in the teaching, it's emphasized in the teachings, that once you sound these mantric phrases, then you set in motion automatic responses coming from the other side, so to speak, from God, from the source of these energies, and this is how they are brought into the world. So here again, it's using sound in a synchronous vibration.
We have, I think, a clue, an insight to what we're talking about in the tradition of the Eastern faiths, who speak of God as deep within the human heart and nearer than hands or feet. It's not going from point A to point B, or much less point Z. It is realizing the divinity that is already present within the world, and yet so hidden that we don't recognize it, which is, I suppose, inevitable, because true divinity can't be degraded, even though it dwells within substance. If it were degradable, it wouldn't be divinity. So we don't even recognize it until we become somewhat more divine ourselves.
Right, and that starts with us. We have to make the effort to begin the perfecting process. And I think that's when it really begins to feel that response coming back from the soul.
More to say.
Please take advantage of today's special offer from Lucis Publishing Company, and that's the Alice Bailey book, Ponder on This. Ponder on This is a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey, including a chapter on the nature of God. It's available for $19. So if you want to take advantage of this offer, please send a check or money order, $19, to Lucis Publishing. 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. That's Lucis, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing. 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. If you need to contact us for any reason, you're welcome to give us a call on our toll-free number, which is 1-866-695-8247. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.